I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Bryce. I'm really grateful to be here and have the opportunity to come and share my experience, strength, and hope with Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to know, if you're new in AA, nobody's the leader. I'm not the leader. I'm just somebody that's coming here to speak. And in any other AA meetings you go to, you're going to hear other speakers, and they're not the leader. They're not important. They're just other alcoholics just like you. We're all equals. And what we do is we come and share our experience, strength, and hope for two reasons. One, that in order to keep it, in order to keep my sobriety, I need to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and share my experience, strength, and hope with you so I can keep it. And the other reason is that if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, hopefully you'll be able to relate into Alcoholics Anonymous through any number of speakers that you're going to hear over the next, you know, little while that you're here. And there's alcohol affects people differently, and what the reason why I started saying this is that, you know, like my mom would drink and, you know, watch television, wake up the next day, go to work. You know, she kept the house together. You know, and she drank maybe a quart of wine every night, or a little more. And it's not up to me to say she's an alcoholic. She's dead now, and you know, I don't have any right to do that, and I'm not even saying that. But that's, you know, alcohol was doing that for her. And my old man, you know, would drink a case of beer, maybe six packs every night, and you know, and drink it all the time. But he didn't go to work. You know, he didn't retire. He just didn't go to work. He sat on a couch. My mom made the money, and you know, so that's how alcohol affected him. And there's, you know, there's other people that you're going to hear while you're in AA of how alcohol affects them. And how alcohol affected me was that I drank and became insane. Really insane. Not a joke. You know, not make-believe insane, or, you know, just to get my way insane. I drank and I became insane. And I guess, you know, and the only reason I remember my first drink of hard liquor was because of the color. My parents were like, you know, they showed me how to make drinks. And I was only 5 years old, you know, and I was at Grandma's house, and all my aunts and uncles and all the kids were there, and everybody was playing, and it was, you know, a lot of fun, and they were like, Bryce, make Grandma a drink. And it was, you know, I only guess it was vodka, but and it was some blue stuff. You pour it on top of it, and then you bring it out to Grandma. And then, you know, she wouldn't drink it, or I would just take it and go back in the kitchen, and I drank it, and I tasted it, and then I would make Grandma another one. I'd do the same thing. And now, it wasn't, you know, I'm not saying I'm an alcoholic. I'm not even saying that, you know, it made any difference. But I remember drinking it and being drunk, you know, and staggering and falling on the floor, and everybody saying, you know, Bryce drank, you know, and so what? You know, they told me to go in there and make it. I'm supposed, you know, I'm that kind of kid, you know. I'm that kind of kid. And, you know, I'm going to drink it. I'm going to do what you tell me not to do. And, you know, I'm going to just have my way. And that's, you know, that's just my bag. And later in life, it was about 7 or 8. We moved into a house, and my old man bought a second refrigerator for this house. And in that refrigerator was 10 cases of beer every Friday, Michelob or Budweiser. And he would told me, you know, you touch that beer and I'll break your arm. And he did those kind of things. And, you know, so to me, you know, it's like you're an alcoholic. You know, Bryce, go to meetings and, you know, say your prayers and don't drink and, you know, do what your sponsor says. But by the time it goes in my head, you know, it's like go to meetings, go to bars afterwards, you know, do this, do that, you know, blah, 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 be insane, speed, steal a car. And, you know, and so I got to really stay in the middle because, you know, what I hear isn't whatever anybody said, you know, and I'm just like, you know, what? And so my old man said, don't touch the beer. And so to me it was, you know, that beer's for you. Since we don't buy soda, you can have beer. And, you know, and so, you know, every morning I got dressed for school. I would take a six-pack. And out of, you know, there's 10 cases, that's 46 packs. He, you know, wasn't going to miss six packs, and because he drank that way. And I would bring it to school, and my buddy, Pat Sherman, his dad owned a tour bus, and he used to bring miniatures of J&B Scotch. and he'd bring three or four miniatures, and I would bring a six-pack. And we couldn't always drink that much. I mean, it wasn't every day either. But, you know, we have a beer, and we would share either a J&B Scotch miniature and drink a beer when school started. And then it was recess, and there was another beer in J&B Scotch. And then it was after recess, there was lunch. And then, you know, another beer and scotch. And then after lunch, there was at 1 o'clock, you go to Phys Ed. And then there was another beer. And so every time we ran out, because the place was surrounded by woods, and me and him would run in there, then the trouble started, you know, because after 1 o'clock is 3 o'clock, you know. And so that period of time, we weren't going outside. We weren't, you know, doing anything. And then, you know, Bryce started throwing spitballs, getting in fights in class, screaming, yelling, slamming doors, pushing over desks, you know, just, you know, that kind of little kid. And you know, my old man would, you know, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, and he would beat me. I mean, he's broken my fingers, my bones, my head. You know, he was that kind of guy. And I don't blame him. You know, I mean, I'm not an alcoholic because of that. The only reason I mention it is because some people want to blame other people. I was one of them. My sponsor said, well, if you want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to do what we do. And I said, what's that? And he said, you got to forgive him. And, you know, I was just like, no, I want to blame him. You know, and, you know, no, it's not his fault. Because he lived with a girl, and he said, Melanie, her parents have never had a drink. They've never hit her, never touched her. She's never been molested, beaten, robbed, nothing. And she's an alcoholic. And I am so blessed when I got to AA, because for some reason, what my sponsor said got through. It got through to the point to where it wasn't like, hey, Bryce, how are you today? You know, and then I would hear, you know, fuck you, Bryce, you didn't clean up the kitchen, you know, and it was like, you know. And so I heard what he was saying, and I was really, really, really lucky. You know, unfortunately, he was my sponsor for 23 and a half years. His death anniversary was yesterday, and I love the guy. You know, I really love the guy. He is a great guy, and I'll remember him forever. I love him more than, you know, my brother, and that's another story. But, you know, he was my family. You know, he was a great guy, and I miss him dearly. I feel lonely, you know, because he's not around a lot of times. Even though I do have another sponsor who is a great guy, you know, I feel a loss. And when I was, you know, a kid and drinking, you know, I was in second or third grade and constantly getting in fights, constantly getting in trouble. Finally, the teacher I really liked this third grade teacher, her name was Miss Young, was so nice to me. She called my parents in and said, look, you know, we think your kid's hyperactive. And back in the 60s, that meant you got Dexedrine. Now, I don't know if any of you know what Dexedrine is, but it is really, you know, it's happening speed. And I remember being in class in the elementary school and watching, you know, this is heroin, this is coke, this is that, and here's Dexedrine. And I was like, I mean, I stood up, I have that in my pocket, you know. You know, and they used to give me the whole vial, you know, and I would take it to school just so I would have it every day. And next thing you know, the sixth graders are, you know, hey, Bryce, what's happening? You know, and I traded Dexedrine for cookies, as you can well see. And, you know, and I just, I was getting in trouble. And then I got into third grade, from second to third grade, and it was the summertime. And my buddy and me went down to the school, the elementary school, and I stole the fifth of scotch from my father and mother, and I chugged a little more than half the bottle. I mean, I couldn't have weighed 60 pounds, and I turned around, and, you know, I mean, it seemed like seconds. You know, I was loaded. And I picked up a rock and broke a window. And then I picked up a stick and broke 400 windows. And, you know, the cops came. Other kids were breaking windows. And I was the littlest. I mean, I'm just a little kid, you know. And these other guys were big guys, and they ran away. And I just stood there, and the cops said, which way did they go? And I said, they went that way, man. And, I don't know how I made it home. My parents beat the crap out of me because the dog came home without me. he was like, I'm leaving. And he went home, and I was like, and a day later, maybe 2 days, the cops were knocking on our front door. And my old man said, hey, we're going to see a movie. And he goes, and I said, really, what are we going to go see? And he goes, we're going to go see Bryce in jail. And I was like, what? And and he goes, we're going down to the police station. You broke all those. They all told on you, And I got in trouble. And I thought I was going to get a beating. My old man was a beater. And, one time the teacher called and said, Bryce stole a ruler, and I didn't. And he made me put my finger down, he broke my fingers. And the next day he found out I didn't. And, and I was like, are you going to say you're sorry? He goes, you deserved it for what you didn't get caught for. And for some reason that made sense to me. that's my bag, that's what was happening in my brain, as a little kid. And we went to the police station, my parents, I was in the newspaper for the first time. I broke 400 windows at the elementary school in third grade. And my old man put me on 3 years restriction. And he goes, you're going to feel like what it's like to be in jail. And he wasn't bullshitting, he made me stay in the house for 3 years. And I could go to the front yard, which was about from here to Lindsay. And, kids wouldn't play with me. I became a really mean dog on a leash, I just was, and everybody'd ride their bikes by, and, it wasn't happening. So I stayed in the house, I drank beer, and I just, I didn't have anything to do, So, I decided I was going to kill my father. Now, I was only fourth grade, and I started lifting weights. My brother was a weightlifter, and so I was in the basement lifting weights all the time. And I'm a 4-year-old kid, and my aspiration is to kill my dad. I wasn't getting any saner, and I ended up just getting in a lot of trouble. I'd sneak out at night and break into houses, or I'd sneak out at night and go across the tracks, and I love getting in fights, and I just anything I could do to get, just change my mood. And I would fight and sneak out or go over to so-and-so's house. And, I kept doing that. And then I was in sixth grade, and, I got introduced to other things because I was still taking dextrine, and I was trading them to people that were in junior high school. And then I went to junior high, and, that's where things started to get a little better. I was more, I met more people like me, I guess I was 13 years old, coming back when I was in the paper for breaking windows and, being arrested. You go over to somebody's house and, Billy home? Yeah, what's your name? Bryce. Oh, my God, Billy's not playing with you. I was the kid that your mom didn't want around, and for good reason. If somebody like me came to my house, I'd be like, get lost, kid. And, when I got to junior high school, I was 13 years old. And back then, it was very early 70s. They used to have rumbles like on West Side Story. You go into a tennis court and you close a gate, and it was us against them, and, bam. And whoever lost, had to give up all their crap to the winners. And to me, that was just so much fun, because I got to take out all my hate. I got to, I wasn't a restriction. And, and then I started doing much worse enhancers to alcohol. Everything I could get my hands on, anything that anybody would let me come and hang out with them, I was doing what they were doing. And, I look at kids, when I was a kid, I couldn't see measure. And, I look at little kids and, I'm like, God, when I was that age, I was doing this. And, my mom worked constantly to try and keep, money coming into the family. She was the breadwinner. And my old man was just, would just drink and play golf. you know, he couldn't do anything else. I mean, I understand what alcohol does to alcoholics, and I don't blame him, and I've forgiven him. But when I was in junior high, we went on Rumbles, and then I went to a party, and we started, there was some alcohol there. Some guys brought some alcohol. And, you know, I was like, this is where I belong, man. And one of my buddies came walking up toward me. He was carrying a stereo, and he had two bottles of liquor in his pocket. And, you know, and I was like, where'd you get that? He goes, I just broke into the house down the street. And, you know, to me, that was like saying, you know, I just won the lottery. You know, I mean, I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you know, I broke in and I climbed in a window. And, you know, it was like, I was like, oh, my God. You know, this is heaven. And, you know, I could get stereos. I could get anything I wanted because I had no remorse. You know, I was taught no remorse. You know, my old man would do things and, you know, no remorse. And that's what I did. I started breaking into windows. I was a 13-year-old drunk and drug addict, and I was not a sane kid. And coming back, you know, you just heard about Sergeant Shriver and Mrs. Shriver on the radio. They lived right down the street from me, and when I was 11, they were having this huge party, and me and my buddy who lived across the street went in. I stole one of their cars for a couple weeks. And we didn't get caught, you know, but we were driving around, sitting on a phone book, you know, wrecking into other cars, you know, hitting trees, running over bushes, you know, just laughing our asses off, you know, because that's what you do when things are funny. And, you know, it was fun. And we didn't get caught, and then we parked it down the road, and some other kids got caught with it, and we thought we were so smart, you know, and it just, you know, it was constant unmanageability. You know, because I couldn't. I was so over here. There was no way I was getting on the right track. You know, and it started to get worse. And when I was 13, I went to Rumbles, and then my buddy came out with this stuff, and he showed me how to break into houses. And then I met, you know, like it says in AA, we grow the fellowship around us that we crave. You know, and that's what I was doing outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would, you know, we were not nice people, and then I started breaking into houses, and I started doing it alone. I started breaking into Circuit City, and then I broke into White Flint Mall, which is a giant mall, you know, and I broke in there like 30 times and stole clothes and jewelry, and I was in the paper, and, you know, I just was like, I'm the stuff, and, you know, I was insane, you know, I had so many insane things that I used to grow my ego or make me feel secure or make me feel understood. And I was 13 and I broke into somebody's house and I found some guns. And I found some handguns and some rifles. And then I became a 13-year-old insane kid with handguns. And I would pull them out and, you know, I didn't kill anybody. But, you know, as I got a little older, you know, we were shooting back and forth at each other, and, you know, it just, you know, that's the kind of people I like to hang around with. You know, we're gonna kill each other. And, when I turned 15 years old, I, went to high school, and my parents sent me to this very rich high school. And these guys, you know, they had access to everything. You know, I was playing with pistols, and their parents had machine guns, you know, and it was like we could break into their gun locker, you know, and get some really fun stuff, and we would break into houses all the time. And when we were 15, there was a field party, and me and my buddy got in a fight, and he came back, he was going to kill me, you know, he tried to kill me, and instead he killed my friend next to me, you know, and it was just the luck of the draw, you know, it wasn't my time. And, you know, and that guy died. And again, my name was in the paper, you know. And by then, it was in the paper probably 3 or 4 times for breaking, entering, burglary, arrests, murder. You know, just, it was, you know. So I go to people's houses and, you know, or I ask some chick out, you know, and their parents find out who she's going out with. You know, it didn't go over big. And, but I just, you know, it was okay. You know, I could drink it away. You know, it didn't matter. And or I'd find somebody else, or there's plenty of girls that like bad guys. And You know, I was just, I would blow it off one way or another and just drink it away. And I also, at that time, I was 15 years old. I was in high school. My girlfriend broke up with me, you know, which devastated me, you know. And so I went home and took a couple handfuls of my mom's pills, you know, drank a bottle of whiskey, got on my bicycle, rode down the hill and rode my bike in front of a truck, tried to kill myself. And, you know, I got hit and bounced off onto the grass. And I wake up and I'm in the grass and, the ambulance is there. They bring me to the hospital. You know, what happened? And I'm like, you know, they found an empty vial of, what was it, what they used to take, Valium. You know, from my mom, and I took some aspirin, and I took everything else that I could find, and you know, they pumped my stomach, and, you know, then here comes the worst part was my brother. You know, he comes into the hospital with a couple of his friends, and I'm tied down, and he's a minister kind of a guy, you know, and so him and his buddies were just preaching, you know, and I was like, it was like, you know, I felt like the witch on the Wizard of Oz. He just got splashed with water. I'm melting. Oh, it was terrible. I mean, for hours this went on, you know, and that was just, you know, so it really turned me off to that. And but when I was a little kid, I had also been molested by a minister. I was molested by a nanny, and I had all these things I wanted to blame. You know, I told my sponsor, I was like, you know, it's their fault. You know, I was 5 years old when this happened. I was 7 years old when I was this year, you know, and this happened for, you know, and he just said the same thing that he said about my old man. You know, if you want what we have, you do what we do, and you have to forgive them. It didn't go over big at the moment, but he said, you have to forgive them if you want to stay sober. And that's what, you know, that was the kicker, man, because, you know, it makes it a lot easier to understand. Because when I started, as soon as I got sober, great things started to happen and bad things started to stop happening, you know. And I was 16, I attempted suicide, 15, started attempting suicide for my first time. And by then I was stealing cars and, you know, robbing people at gunpoint and, you know, just to drink. I didn't, you know, I don't care about the money. And then there was a party in high school, and you know, my buddy had it. He was my age, and then his older brother and his older brother. So there were people from college all the way down to as old as I was. And I turned my head, and I saw some drunk, you know, with a beard and a mustache, you know, doing this kind of stuff, holding a bottle. And he was getting ready to go out the back door because I just saw him turn the doorknob in the bathroom. And I followed him out, and I smashed his head in with a pipe and took his wallet. And I hope I remember the other half of that story later, but that's, you know, and I took his wallet, and back then they didn't have picture IDs. They had typed IDs on pink cardboard or something like that, and so I could buy liquor when I was 15, you know, at the liquor store, and I became very popular. I like that. And, you know, the girls were coming, driving me to school in their parents' cars got bought for them, you know, and I'm like, you know, the kid from across the tracks, and it was fun. I mean, it was really fun. And there used to be a place called Dickerson's, and we could go swimming at Dickerson's and drink, and everybody skinny dipping, and just, you know, yahoo! You know, life was a lot of fun. And I didn't see the bad in it, even though other people could see what was happening. You know, I couldn't, because I'm the sick one. And I started to get a little worse, and I became much more suicidal. And then I started to not want to drink anymore. You know, I turned 18, and I drank, and, you know, I was awake. I wasn't blacked out, but it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. I was at home, and, you know, I took a knife and I cut both my wrists. I stabbed myself, you know, and trying to kill myself. And that became, you know, and I thought I was going to die. I mean, it was not a little knife. It wasn't a steak knife. It was a, you know, this gigantic thing. And I thought, you know, this is, thank God. And I've shot myself. I've, you know, I and as time went on, you know, the attempts and overdoses and trying to drink more and, you know, wreck my car into a damn tree, and that didn't work. I mean, I was like, what is going on? You know, I was like, God, you don't like me. Why don't you want me to die? You know, and I just kept blaming him, and it was always blaming somebody else. You know, I got a speeding ticket because of that guy, and not another DWI, you know, and I just, it was just endless stuff and endless torture, you know, not only for me, but I couldn't stop stealing either. And if you fell in love with me, you know, kids do, and you invited me over to your house, I was ripping your parents off, you know. Like, back then, they used to build these houses where you could come in from the hallway and go into the bathroom and go through the bathroom into the master bedroom. And, you know, I used to do that all the time. You know, go in, go into the master bedroom, steal credit cards, steal all the jewelry, take everything I possibly could, you know. Then go downstairs and have dinner with them and, you know, act like... I forget that guy's name on Leave It to Beaver. You know, the guy who was always nice, but really a troublemaker. And then I'd go out and, you know, spend thousands and thousands of dollars on their credit card in a very short period of time, sell their mother's jewelry, you know, and just keep going back like, hi, you know, and what's happening? You know, and then eventually, you know, the smell from my shit would wake them up, you know, and they'd be like, dude, you gotta go, you know, and I couldn't stop, you know, I couldn't stop becoming worse and worse and worse, you know, and it just seemed like I would pray to God, you know, please, God, please, it was Friday night, I don't want to drink, you know, it'd be 4 o'clock, and I was like, okay, cool, 4 in the afternoon, you know, I'm not drinking, then it was 5, and, you know, please, please, and then as, you know, as darkness set in, you know, my craving for alcohol would overtake me no matter what. You know, and I just would be like, I gotta go. And my poor mom, you know, she me and her have always been close. And, you know, I would just, you know, I remember this 2 times in particular. I went down to my mom. I said, Mom, I'm dope sick, which was a lie. I didn't even, you know, do that. And, I mean, I did, but not like that. And I said, and I need some booze, man. I just need some booze. And I said, I need $200. And it was her payday, not mine, you know, and she gave me $200, you know. And once that started, that ball started rolling, you know, I was there every Friday, you know, trying to get more from her, lie, make up false stories. You know, I hurt them terribly, you know. I did much worse to them than they ever did to me, you know, and just, you know, beatings and things they said, so what, you know, I stole from them, they saw me, you know, dying on their living room rug, you know, many times, and, you know, I did to them much worse than they ever did to me, and by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 26 years old, I had when I was 19, I used to break into restaurants and have really lavish parties with lobster tails and filet mignon and corn and, you know, all the stuff that I stole from the restaurant down the street after closing. And one day, a buddy of mine got busted. He got busted for breaking into a house. And they, you know, and he had been busted a couple times before, and they were like, "You're going to jail." And he said, "Well, you know, I got a big fish. And I'll rat on this guy who stole from this, if you let me go, because my old lady's about to have a baby." And so he ratted me out, and, you know, maybe 30 cops came to my parents' house, which must have been lovely for them, and they had a search warrant, and they, you know, they went through the house, and I had 13 arrests after that, a few felonies and, you know, daytime and nighttime breaking and entering. So they can, you know, they found the guns, you know, I mean, just it was not pretty. And the problem was is that my grandfather and my father have the same name as me. They gave me their name. And so whenever there was something in the paper about me, you know, Bryce McNaughton is their name too, you know, and I remember my grandpa coming over and going, "Dude, man," you know, he didn't say dude, but, you know, he was, he's very Scottish strict, you know, and he said, "You're shaming our name, you know, and I didn't get it. I was like, you're a dick. What do you mean? I'm shaming your name. You've been mean to me. You know, you talk, you know, you just, you know, get away. You know, I didn't get it. And one day my old man came after me. He was beating me up, and he knocked me down to the floor. And I bumped, you know, I hit a chair in a living room chair, and it knocked over, and there was a couple handguns underneath there. He goes, are you going to shoot me? I said, yeah, I am. You know, I'm going to kill you. And he was much bigger than me. He beat the shit out of me, took the guns, and that's when he realized, you know, I better stop hitting this guy, you know, because I said, well, if you know you're going to take the guns, I'm going to bury a screwdriver in your chest. And I was not sane. You know, I lost my mind and had no way. You know, prayer, I couldn't get it back. Not drinking, couldn't get it back. Because alcoholism is not drinking. Alcoholism is who I am and what I need to take care of on a daily basis. And it just kept getting worse. I mean, a lot worse. And finally, I got in front of a judge, and he said, Bryce, look, you know, I'm going to give you 3 years in Second Genesis or 3 years in prison. But the good thing is, I'm going to let you pick. Because your lawyer tells me you don't think you have a drug or an alcohol problem. And I said, I'll take jail. And he sent me to jail for 3 years. I had friends in jail. I sold dope to the guards. You know, I knew I was going to be taken care of. But if the bus driver that just came down the street or the garbage man or the mailman, and I said, should I go to jail or should I go to treatment? He'd be like, you know, is that a question? You know, you should go to treatment, dumbass. You know, and I couldn't pick up the ball. And I just couldn't do it, man. I just couldn't do it. And then I'd go and drink again, you know. And I got 3 years. I did a year in jail and came out a lot smarter and a lot tougher. And I was ready, man. I was 19 years old. I was really, really ready. I had already planned what I was going to rob, who I was going to shoot, and what, you know, it was coming, man. And I came out and I met this beautiful girl, you know, and her name's Priscilla. And I just fell in love with her, so I put all this resentment on the back burner, you know, and then I drank, and, you know, she was really, really a good person. I think God really did put her in my life, and so maybe I could smarten up. But I didn't know where to go to smarten up. I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I didn't know, you know, I could go somewhere else. And I ended up drinking that out of my life. And then somebody else came in and, you know, loved me. And they were really rich. So, you know, I ransacked their house, stole everything. Her mom died, left her an engagement ring. And I stole that. You know, just no comprehension of other people's anything. And that's, you know, that's just my... And I, you know, she asked me, did you do that? I said, no. Because I hung out with people just like me. It could have been anybody, you know. And I didn't have the guts to tell her, you know. I just didn't have the guts. Because I'm a drunk, a loser, and a drunk. Time went on, and I started, you know, my mom was like, please go see a psychiatrist. You know, you're really sick. So I went to a psychiatrist when I was about 24. And I went to see him, and he saw I had a gun behind my jacket, you know, in my belt, in my blue jeans. And he called me out. He said, oh, I see you have a gun in the back. I said, look, fuck you, man. I am so sorry that slipped out. And forgive me, Billy. I know you would never do that. And I said, I want Halcyon and I want Xanax. And he gave me unlimited prescriptions, and it wasn't his fault at all. If I knew somebody like me, I would have done that. And I ended up on I was so lucky that he did that, because that was my start to my bottom. I started taking the whole vial full of Halcyon, drinking hard liquor, and ended up in blackouts for days. I got DWIs all the time, and then my parents went out of town, and I took both bottles and drank some rum, and I attempted suicide for the last time. I took a knife, and I stuck it in my arm, and I dragged it all the way up to here, and cut both my wrists, and then stabbed myself, and started drinking, you know, and I'm laying in bed, and blood's coming out of my arm, and I have a gun next to me, and I hear a noise, and I look over, and my buddy's climbing in the window. He's trying to rip me off, you know. And he sticks his head in, and he goes, "What the hell are you doing?" You know, I'm laying on the bed, I'm dying, and I said, "What the hell are you doing?" You know, and I grabbed the gun, and he slid back out the window and called an ambulance. And I have a couple hundred stitches in my left arm and in my wrists. And the next day, I don't know what happened, but the next day, you know, I said, "I'm going to go to treatment." And I went to treatment, and I came out and I drank. And I got 4 DWIs in a week. I ended up, my lawyer said, "You're going back to jail." I said, "If I go to jail, I'm going to shoot you. You better work your butt off." And he had me arrested for saying that. And I was like, no, not this again, you know. It just terrifying. I was so afraid of me. And I went to treatment again, you know, and I didn't have any idea because I was really, really insane. I couldn't read. I couldn't write. I couldn't, you know, I got out of school because they didn't want me there. I really couldn't job. I couldn't do a job. I was totally dysfunctional, unmanageable, and had no life whatsoever and was getting arrested. And I didn't even know it, you know, because my blackouts were lasting so long. And I came to AA in Bethesda, Maryland. And I saw one of my buddies there, and, you know, I went up to him, and I said, "Hey, man, you know, I need some help." And now, what he said was, "You're too slippery. You know, I can't help you. You know, you need to find somebody that can." And I said, "Well, you know, what's a sponsor?" And he pointed to his sponsor, and I went and asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he was my sponsor for 23 and a half years. The guy who pointed me to him was a friend of mine. We grew up across the street from each other, and he didn't stay sober. He was a chronic relapser for years, and now he's got, I think, 17 years. And what happened was, you know, is that when I came to AA, my sponsor told me that, you know, all I have to do is admit that I'm alcoholic and my life's unmanageable, and I get to have a day of sobriety. But he said, "You can't do it out on your own, and you can't do it in a bar. You have to do it in a meeting." So I came to a meeting, and I, you know, I admit it. I'm an alcoholic. My life's unmanageable. And I didn't drink that day. And he said, "So if it works, then do it tomorrow." And I was like, "Okay." And I went to a meeting, and I didn't do it again, you know. And when I met with this guy for the first time, he put his hand on my leg, and I had been to jail, and I didn't like that. And I told him so, and he said, you know, "It's because you're insane." And he said that I could be restored to sanity. Now, my brother was a minister, and his friends, you know, touching, healing, you know, all that garbage. And so I personally, if I heard somebody say, "You can be restored to sanity," I'm surprised my head didn't say, "You're full of crap." Instead, I believed him. You know, after all these years of insanity and torture and self-abuse and hatred and, you know, just all that, I believed him. And I only had like 2 days out of treatment that time, and I believed him, and I was graced. And he said, "Bryce, the deal is that you have to make a decision to turn your will and your life over to care of God." And I said, "I don't believe in God. I don't like God. I don't want to believe in God." He said, "Well, have you stayed sober for a little while?" You know, I think by then it was 3 months. And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, do you think you were doing that?" And I said, "No, you were." And he goes, "Well," he goes, "you know, Alcoholics Anonymous was. And if you can't believe in God, that's okay, because you're not going to lose anything today. What you got to believe in is Alcoholics Anonymous is a power greater than yourself." And, you know, I was, okay, you're right. You know, everybody in the meeting wants me to stay sober. They want to help me. You know, they let me call them. You know, I mean, people didn't want me to call them for a long time. You know, and I was having it, you know. It was like cool, and I had friends, and they came and got me, and you know, things were going good, and I was happy. And I hadn't been happy in a really, really long time. And I ended up, you know, hearing people say all the time, the same man will drink again, the same man will drink again. And, you know, I said, Mike, what's that mean? He said, well, that means you have to do the fourth step. Take an inventory of myself, not my father, not the minister that molested me, not the nanny that this, and not so-and-so that. Take an inventory of myself so I can change. Because that's really going to be my roadmap. These are the defects, you know, what cause and effect, baby, you know, and what's my part? What causes me to act like that? What causes me to want to stab you? Fear, anger, resentment. What causes me to want to grab a drink? Because you know what? I don't want to drink anymore. I want to do what you guys have done so I can stay sober. And then I had to share it with somebody, and I was really uncomfortable with that because I was like, you know, well, you know, a lot of this stuff can send me to jail. And he pointed out in the book, you know, where it says, we're willing to do anything, even if it means going to jail. And he said, if you want what we have, you do what we do. And, okay, I told him everything. I left nothing out. And you know who was free? Not him. I was. I was free because I didn't have to hide anymore or lie. And all of a sudden, I started to be able to look people in the eye. And to me, that's a miracle. Because I'm such a liar and a thief and a cheat and a self-hater. I can't look you in the eye, man. It's just not happening. And then I asked him to remove my defects. What defects, Mike? What defects am I asking him to move? He said, you ask God to remove the defects that can cause you to drink. Let's start with that. Okay, so after you do a fifth step, you go and you pray for a little while, and an hour, and you ask God to remove your defects, and that's what I did. And then he said, now ask him to remove all these defects that are in your inventory. I said, okay, that's what I'll do. There was no argument. How that happened, I don't know. I have no idea. And the seventh step, you know, remove my shortcomings. Okay. Okay. I try. AA says, you know, we practice progress, not perfection. And I'm trying for progress. You know, just a little bit of progress. I made a list of all persons I had harmed. I made amends to that young lady that I stole her diamond. Her mother's diamond. I made amends to the guy who tried to kill me and killed the guy next to me because I went to court and lied. And I made amends to my mother, who I love so much, and my father, who I loved so much. By making amends to them, I was able to take my father on vacations all over the place. And he'd never really been anywhere other than England, or, you know, just he really never got anywhere. And then he died. He got Alzheimer's and died. And then a few months later, my mom had got cancer. And I took her all over the world. And anywhere, I said, you make a list then. She told me she was dying. I said, make a list. And on that list, I want to know all your dreams. Because I had given her all her nightmares. So she made a list. She wanted to go to Vegas. She wanted to go on a cruise in the Caribbean. She wanted to go to Europe. She wanted this. Boom, 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 boom. I was able to do that. I didn't want to spend the money on myself. Plus, you know, at the time, I had enough, you know, and it was there. It was beautiful. It was great. Man, it was the best time of my life. And just before she died, she made a little video telling me how much she loved me. Now, that's cool as shit. You know, that's something else. And the final thing she said, and then she got her twin sister in on the video. She said, you know, the best time of my life was the time I got to spend with you. And, you know, because I moved them into my house, my father and mother. And that was a big deal to me. You know, it's a big deal. It is a very big deal. And I love my mom and you know, I was there for her and, you know, cleaned her up and, you know, did everything. And she would be like, oh, isn't this terrible? I said, no, it's not terrible, Mom. I get to be with you. Would you rather have a nurse you don't know in here? She said, no, I want you. Thank God, you know, and it was awesome. And I made a list of all people I had harmed. I made amends and made direct amends to them also. I love them. Very grateful, very lucky. And in the 10th step, when I was coming up in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was first new, I used to pick up chairs, clean ashtrays, mop the floor, get on the floor, and clean around everything. Toilets, I didn't care. There was this place called the Rockville Metro Pub. Everything. Cooked turkeys at Thanksgiving. I used to be a chef. And me and this other guy named Chris Ryan and this other guy named Paul Raines. And one day, you know, after months of doing this, me, all of us, I mean, we were running buddies. And one day, Chris Ryan goes to jail. And I said, what happened? He drank. How did that happen? Somebody gave him a beer and he took it and drank it and started drinking. And he kicked in his girlfriend's front door and beat up her parents. Beat her up. Cops came, arrested him. Bam. And I was like, well, how did that happen? We have, you know, we're doing this. And my sponsor, you know, and then a little while later, Paul Raines, and this, swear to God, this is the truth, and drank, kicked in his neighbor's door, and killed them both, husband and wife, double murder. And I said to my sponsor, I was like, you know, okay, you know, I'm next. What's happening? You know, I'm hanging out with these guys. He goes, well, the difference is that they're doing something in front of people so people will see. He goes, the difference is, you have to have a program. And I said, well, what's a program? He goes, a program is what you do when you're not in a meeting. And so, you know, I said, well, I do this and this and this and this and this. He goes, then you shouldn't have to worry about it. And I was like, all right, you know, that's with me. You know, okay. And then the 11th step is sought through prayer and meditation to increase the quality of my life with my higher power. And that's not exact wording, but, you know, that's... Sought through prayer and meditation to improve the conscious contact with God as I understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And I have a God. I have a higher power. And I pray for this daily. Sometimes I forget. Maybe I'm worried. Maybe I'm in a hurry. Maybe something else happens. But this is a practice because I want the results. What are the results? The results are the next step. Having had a spiritual awakening is a result of these steps, the other 11. We try to carry this message to alcoholics and then practice these principles in all our affairs. And I'm really, you know, really, really blessed and lucky that Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to do that. Because I was so truly insane. I was so hurt. I took out my pain on other people. I did things to people that, you know, I had to make amends for. So they wouldn't have to go through life and do the things that, you know, with the pain that I caused them or the harm that I caused them. And some of the people I couldn't find, I try to find. I mean, I have a huge network of people. And, you know, over the period I've been sober, I got sober April 16th, 1984. And over the 25 years... A lot of my friends have come into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and stayed sober. And they were like, man, if you're, you know, what are you doing here? What? You know, and I thought everybody cared. And, you know, they didn't even know what the hell. You know, they weren't even watching. And, you know, I just, I couldn't stop what I was becoming. And now I'm grateful for what I am, you know. I'm a lucky, lucky person. I have a wonderful life. You know, it was rough for the last 3 years. You know, I went through some stuff that just, you know, was really, really, you know, I lost, you know, a house and money and, you know, I lost a lot of stuff. And Mike used to say, you know, if your stuff didn't get you sober, your stuff can't get you drunk. And, you know, and then I didn't get a job for 3 years, probably 2 years, 3 years, you know, I was broke. And, And then, you know, but I've been all over the world too, you know, at the same time. It's kind of funny how AA works, you know, and I've sailed through the Caribbean, you know, many, 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 many times, probably 17 times. I've took a couple of months and cruised in the Mediterranean and went to Libya when they allowed us there. It was a very brief window of 2 months where they opened up for Americans, and I got to go there and see the oldest ruins in the world. I got to go to Egypt and see the pyramids and the Sphinx and Cairo and Tripoli and, you know, Gaza Strip, and go to Turkey and Greece and Italy, and then see all the islands in the Mediterranean, Santorini, and just many, many, many more than I can imagine. And just recently, I've been from Alaska to Venezuela, and recently I just went to Asia and took a 6 month trip, and recently a year and a half ago, and went to Japan, Taiwan, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Burma, Thailand, and I went to meetings. You know, and I saw, you know, before I split, I called New York, you know, and I said, okay, you know, they gave me names and numbers, and they finally sent me the book, because that was a pain in the ass, and they gave me the book, and I called people ahead of time. You know, I made friends with people in Vietnam before I got there. I made friends with people in Japan before I got there. Made friends with people in Thailand before I got there. And, you know, and I got to go to these places, and, you know, you get off the airport in Thailand, you know, I was on an island off Thailand called Phuket, and I got off, and, you know, these guys were there, and they were like, Bryce, you know, and because we were Skyping, and, you know, blah, 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 and it was just so much fun, you know, it was so much fun. And then after my mom died, my sponsor told me he had cancer, and I think that God was being nice to me, because I got to take care of my mom. And that was kind of a learning process, because I didn't know how to take care of somebody that was dying and without me feeling sad. You know, without me helping them be enthusiastic. And so I got to do that with my mom, and, you know, act as if, you know, it's okay, Mom. You know, it's okay. And clean her up and wipe her up and take her out and cook food and go to the doctor. And then she died, and a couple of months later, my sponsor told me he was going to die. And I stayed at his house every night, awake, from like 9:30 till 9:30. You know, 9:30 at night till 9:30, because people didn't want, you know, the night shift was rough. A lot of people work, and I didn't. And for months, you know, and me and him had so much fun, you know. It was so, you know, there was so much funny crap and memories. He has a memory like, oh my God, you know, but I don't. But he was remembering all this stuff. And while he was dying, he was making sure that I was laughing, you know, and we were both laughing. So he was in control, man. He knew where he was going, he knew what he was doing, and he made sure at the end he was still pitching drunks. You know, he didn't implode and get selfish, and, you know, people were still bringing new people in front of him, and he was still talking to the new guy. And that's what makes him a king, as far as I'm concerned. You know, he was a damn good man. I love him very much, I miss him very much, but I'm really, really grateful that I got some of him inside of my heart to carry this message to you guys, and to keep carrying it as far as Alcoholics Anonymous keeps letting me. And Billy came down to Bethesda a month ago, and we have been talking acquaintances for quite a long time, and he made an effort, because I was really down. I mean, I was really down, to lift my spirits, and he sent me a card. And he talked to me, and right after he left, I mean, I was in terrible shape, man. I can't tell you. And things started getting better because he changed my attitude. And I hear a lot from friends, you know. And I mean, I'm in, you know, we have a big group of, you know, 400 or 500 But hearing it from Billy was just like when I heard Mike say, you know, even you can be restored to sanity. You know, I believed him. And he gave me a piece of his heart, and he talked to me, and I believed him. You know, and as a result of that, you know, I'm a new guy. You know, it's like things are getting better all the time. And, I really love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, sometimes I'm not the best, but it's only because I'm not supposed to be. You know, we all take turns of being the best. And every once in a while, you know, we're the worst. So just don't stay there. Thank you for letting me come. Thanks so much. Have a good night.